This is a reading of the Agriculture course by Rudolf Steiner. This is the last discussion, the fourth discussion, given in Kobervitz, Monday, June 16, 1924. Question: does liquid manure have the same ego-organizing power as solid manure? Dr. Steiner: what is important is to use them in combination, so that they work together to enhance the organizing forces of the soil. The relationship to the ego applies primarily to the solid manure, and not generally speaking to the liquid manure. But any ego, even the ego potential, present in manure, needs to work in conjunction with something astral, and the solid manure would not have any astrality without the liquid manure. That is what the liquid manure supports. It has stronger astral forces, while the solid manure has stronger ego forces. Solid manure is more like the brain itself, while liquid manure is more like the brain's secretion, the brain's fluid aspect, the cerebral fluid. Question: could you tell us the right times for making the preparations that require burning? And this is Dr. Freda speaking. We can't give exact indications now. The required calculations can't be done so quickly. In general, the right time for burning insects would be between the beginning of February and sometime in August. For getting rid of field mice, the right time this year, 1924, would fall in the period from the second half of November to the first half of December, but the periods shift from year to year. Dr. Steiner: the anthroposophical calendar we once started would have to be executed more precisely. Then you could follow such a calendar quite exactly. And my aside as a reader, there is such a calendar nowadays called the Stella Natura calendar. Wonderful thing. End of my aside. Question: when you talk about full moon and new moon, do you mean just the day of the full or new moon, or do you mean the time shortly before and after as well? Dr. Steiner: consider it new moon, approximately from the time the moon looks like this, and there's a crescent, a drawing. You see the moon looking like this, and then it disappears. Consider it full moon from the time when the moon is present as a narrow crescent, like this, and then disappears, always about 12 to 14 days. Question: if the insects are not available during the right time for burning, can they be saved and burned later? Dr. Steiner: the right time for making these preparations still needs to be determined more precisely. Yes, you can store the insects. Question: do the weed seeds have to be burned in summer, or can they be done at any time? Dr. Steiner: not too long after you have collected them. Question: how should we regard a pepper made from insects that never actually come into contact with the ground? Dr. Steiner: that too should go on the ground. It is not a matter of physical contact. What matters is the quality that this homeopathic dosage contains. Insects have a totally different kind of sensitivity, and they flee from what develops when such a pepper is strewn on the ground. It makes no difference if the insects do not actually touch the ground. Question: what about frost damage in farming, especially frost damage to tomatoes? What is the cosmic context of frost? Dr. Steiner: tomatoes need to be kept warm if you want them to get nice and large. They suffer terribly from frost. As to frost in general, you need only look at its effects. These arise because of a significant strengthening of the cosmic influences that are at work in the earth. At certain temperatures, these cosmic influences are normal and are exactly right for the plants. But if we get a frost that lasts too long and penetrates too deeply, then the celestial influence on the earth is too strong, and the plants tend to spread out in all directions and become stemmy and spindly. Thus, because they are so thin, they may quickly succumb to the surrounding frost. When it goes too far, frost is extremely damaging to plant growth, because too much of the heavens gets into the soil. Question: should we sprinkle the ashes of horseflies on the bodies of the animals, or only on the pastures? Dr. Steiner: spread them where the animals feed. Since these ashes are all intended as supplements to the manure, they are always spread on the fields. Question: what is the best way to get rid of couch grass? Couch grass seeds are very hard to get. Dr. Steiner: when couch grass propagates the way you have in mind, without ever making seeds, it will eventually disappear by itself. If you can't get any seeds, then you don't really have a couch grass problem. On the other hand, if it keeps spreading underground, then it can also be combated. you will be able to find the few seeds that are required. After all, people also find four-leaf clovers. Question: is it permissible to preserve bulk fodder by means of electric currents? Dr. Steiner: what do you hope to accomplish by that? Here, of course, the whole role of electricity in nature needs to be considered. It's of some comfort to know that at least in America, where people are developing a better gift of observation than here in Europe, voices can be heard saying that human beings will no longer be able to grow and develop as they used to, now that the whole atmosphere has electric currents and radiations running through it. This has an effect on the entire development of the human being. It even makes a difference whether the trains in a given area have steam engines or are electrified. The effects of steam can be recognized, but electricity has a terribly unconscious way of working. People simply cannot tell where certain things are coming from. Nowadays, both radiant and conducted electricity are being used above ground to carry news as quickly as possible from one place to another. The effect of the radiant electricity on the people living in the midst of it will be that they will no longer be able to comprehend the news that is transmitted so quickly. Electricity gradually wipes out comprehension. This effect is already noticeable today. You can already see that people have a harder time comprehending things that come toward them than they did a few decades ago. It is a hopeful sign that at least in America some insight into these things is evident. Now, as often happens, when something new appears on the scene, it is soon used for healing, but then it also is taken advantage of by the quote-unquote prophets. When something first appears, it is strange how things that are a matter for clairvoyance are reduced to a mundane level. People come along and make all kinds of wild prophecies about the healing power of electricity, even though earlier it wouldn't have occurred to them at all. Things come into fashion this way. As long as it had not been discovered, it was impossible to think of healing by means of electricity. Now, all of a sudden, it's a method of healing, not just because it is available, but because it has become fashionable. Radiant electricity is sometimes not much more of a remedy than if you were to take tiny, thin needles and poke the patient with them. Any healing that occurs is not due to the electricity, but to the shock effect. You mustn't forget that electricity always works most strongly on the head organization of humans and animals, and correspondingly on the root organization of plants. If you preserve fodder by passing electricity through it, the animals that eat it will eventually become sclerotic. This is a slow process. You won't notice it right away. You might notice at first that the animals tend to die sooner than they ought to, but you'll blame it on all kinds of other things. You won't trace it to the electricity. Electricity is really not something that can work on living things and do them any good. You see, electricity lies one level below the living, and the higher a given form of life is, the more it tries to ward off the electricity. If you constantly make an organism defend itself unnecessarily, it gradually gets nervous and fidgety and sclerotic. Question: what does spiritual science say about preserving fodder by letting it sour, about ensiling in general? Ensiling, I'm not sure I'm pronouncing that right, ensiling. Dr. Steiner: if any salt is used in these kinds of processes, it does not make too much difference whether you add the salt in preparing the fodder or right at feeding time. If you have fodder that does not contain enough salt, so that the fodder is not brought to the places in the body where it's needed, then ensiling is a good thing. Suppose you have fodder beets. We have seen that roots are particularly well suited for working on the head organization. So for certain animals, especially young ones, they are an excellent fodder. However, if in your locality you notice that such fodder makes the animals shed their hair too soon and too strongly, then you should salt the fodder, because you know that is not enough of it. Because you know that not enough of it is being deposited where it ought to be. The fodder is not getting far enough. The general effect of salt is to ensure that the food gets to wherever in the body it is needed. Question: what about making silage out of beet foliage and other green fodder? Dr. Steiner: in this case, you need to make sure to get the optimum result and not go beyond that. In general, ensiling won't have any harmful effects unless it is carried to extremes, since the salt-like components are actually the ones that undergo the least change inside the body. As a general rule, animal constitutions, and human ones to an even greater extent, completely transform what they take in. For example, it is mere prejudice to believe that any of the protein that enters your stomach is of further use to you in that form. The protein has to be totally transformed into dead substance and then turned back into protein by your own etheric body. The etheric body changes it into something human. The etheric body changes it into specifically human or animal protein, as the case may be. Everything that enters a living organism has to be transformed. This even applies to ordinary warmth. I can sketch it schematically like this. There is a drawing. Here is a living organism, and here is the warmth surrounding it. Here is a piece of dead wood, also once part of a living entity, but now dead. And here is the warmth around it. In the case of a living organism, the warmth does not simply penetrate in a little bit, nor does it go straight through the organism. Rather, as soon as the warmth reaches the organism starts to work on it and to transform it into warmth of its own. That's the way it has to be. In the case of the piece of wood, the warmth simply penetrates it and stays the same inside the wood as it is outside in the mineral world. But if warmth were to enter into us without being changed, which is what happens in the case of the wood, at that moment we would catch cold. Nothing that comes into a living organism from outside can stay the way it is. It must be immediately transformed. But this process occurs least of all with salt. That's why you cannot do too much damage with salts when you use them for ensiling fodder, as you suggested. If you overdo it, your animals will refuse to eat the fodder because of the taste. If ensiling is needed for purposes of preservation, then this is a sign that the process is justified to a certain degree. Question: is it advisable to make silage without salt? Dr. Steiner: that is a process that has gone too far. You might say it is a superorganic process, and it can be very harmful under certain circumstances if it has gone too far. Question: are the animals harmed by the whiting that is used to counteract the souring effects? Dr. Steiner: some animals cannot tolerate whiting at all. Whiting is W-H-I-T-I-N-G. It makes them sick. Other animals can tolerate it, but at the moment I can't tell you which ones they are. As a general rule, though, it is more likely to harm them than help them. Question: doesn't it weaken their digestive juices? Dr. Steiner: yes, it makes them ineffective. Question: I would like to ask, if it isn't very important, what a person's frame of mind is in these matters. I mean, there is a big difference between sowing grain and spreading something destructive. The attitude must be considered. When someone uses the methods you introduced against insects, isn't the effect on karma much greater than if the person gets rid of the animals each time, for instance, by mechanical means? Dr. Steiner: well, with regard to the attitude, surely it is basically a matter of whether the intentions are good or bad. But what do you mean by spreading something destructive? You must take into account the whole way in which these things have to be thought about. Consider the way in which today's lecture was given. I showed you, for instance, how you can know something about a subject and even recognize it outwardly, how you can recognize what kind of process flax seed and carrots undergo in an animal's body just by looking at them. In order for something like this to become a reality for you, you have to go through a kind of objectifying process, and this is scarcely possible if you have not permeated yourself with a certain amount of piety. Then you will be doing these things in the service of humanity and the universe. Your attitude could lead to harm only if you were to actively bring in bad intentions. As long as morality in general is being encouraged, I cannot imagine how there would be any negative effects. Do you think it would somehow be less bad to simply chase after the animals and kill them? Question: I just wondered whether the means of destruction, mechanical means or cosmic influences, whether that makes any difference. Dr. Steiner: well, at that point things get very complicated. and they can only be understood if you look at them from a broader perspective. Suppose you catch a fish in the ocean and kill it. There you've killed something. You've done something that takes place on one particular level. But now suppose that for some reason or other you scoop up a whole bucket of seawater in which there is a lot of fish spawn. There you end up killing a whole multitude of life. What you have done there, however, is something quite different from killing that one fish. It is a process that takes place on a quite different level. At the stage of the mature fish, a certain process in nature has been brought to completion. Undoing that causes disruption, but interrupting an unfinished process, one that has not yet come to an end in a mature organism, is not the same thing. So your question can be reduced to this: what wrong am I doing by making this pepper? For what you destroy by applying the pepper is no longer relevant here. That involves a different level. The only thing that could come into consideration is what you need for making the pepper, and in most cases you will destroy far fewer animals by making pepper than you would if you tried to catch them all and kill them by some other means. If you think about this question practically, not in the abstract, I am sure it will not seem so terrible to you. Question: can human feces be used? And if so, how should they be treated before using them? Dr. Steiner: they should be used as little as possible, of course, because the benefit is very slight in comparison with animal manure, and they can be much more harmful than any other kind of manure. If you insist on using them, the amount naturally available on a typical farm is plenty. In fact, there you have a measure of how much can be used without harm. If you mix what comes from the people living on the farm with all the manure that comes from the animals and so on, that gives you an upper limit of what should be used. It is utter foolishness when human manure is used extensively in the vicinity of large cities, for in these cities there is really enough for an enormous farm. How can anybody accept the crazy idea of using all the human manure from the whole city of Berlin, for example, on a small area right outside the city? Just eat the plants that grow there. They will show you what happens. Try it with asparagus or something else that is honest and upright, and you will soon see. You also have to take into account that this manure can be especially harmful if applied to things that are eaten by animals. When what comes from such plants passes through the bodies of animals, a lot of it remains at the same level as the asparagus does when it goes through a human body. Out of sheer ignorance, an awful lot of harm has been done along these lines. Question: how can you get rid of swine erysipelas? And I'm going to read that, spell that word, E-R-Y-S-I-P-E-L-A-S, erysipelas, I think. Rudolf Steiner: well, that is a veterinary question, and I have not considered it yet because nobody ever asked me before. However, I think you could treat it with an external application of stibnite, antimony, or in the right dosage. That is a question of healing. That is a real disease. Question: will those powders also get rid of hybrids, such as wild radish? Dr. Steiner: the powders I talked about only have an effect on the plant species from which they are derived. Thus, if a plant really is a cross between two species, it cannot be affected. Symbioses will not be affected. Question: what do you think of green manuring? Dr. Steiner: it has its good points, especially if it is used more for fruit crops. Such things cannot be applied across the board, but green manuring does have its uses in certain cases. It should be used when you want to strongly reinforce the growth of the green leaves and shoots. If this were your intention, you could supplement your manuring with a little green manure. The end of the fourth discussion.